Well, giving him the glory, perhaps this message today will help do that. In John 15, Jesus Christ said something. I'm sure we know this, but it's something we need to keep in mind, especially in the context of what I'm going to talk about today. John 15, verses 14 and 15. You are my friends if you do whatsoever I command you. And he takes it a step further. Henceforth, I call you not servants, for the servant doesn't know what his Lord does. He sort of keeps it to himself. But I have called you friends, for all things that I have heard of my Father, I have made known to you. What he's saying to his disciples is that he regards them not just as servants, but close, personal friends. And that's what we are if we follow his lead, follow his commandments. We in this time are given extraordinary information. The thing is, do we realize it? What is God revealing to us, and why? See, God knows human tendencies. He knows what we're like, what we're made of, how we think, and what we will do. Bible prophecy is what I'm talking about, because God knows that we need to know certain things, and he wanted to make sure that we knew it, but he gave it to us in such a way that the world at large can read right over it and not follow the point of what he's saying. Bible prophecy is reliable. The problem is in the interpretation of it, because there's many people who have tried all kinds of ways to understand what appear to be indistinct prophetic statements. Some of those ideas are downright haywire. Les had a response to his message of a few weeks ago, where someone wrote in and said that the 10 kings of Revelation were the first 10 Roman emperors, 3 of whom were killed. And that was his idea of the fulfillment of those prophecies. I'd never heard that before. I don't know who else is of that opinion. Like I say, I've never heard it. But the point is, there's many, many ideas of how prophecies are going to come to pass. The particular one that I want to cover today has to do with our immediate future. And we should take this information with that thought in mind. God has given us something to give us the idea of what's going on and where it's going to ultimately lead to. Question we need to ask ourselves is, are our esteemed scholars, the doctrinalists who try to explain prophecy, are they providing us with sound answers in this particular area? Unfortunately, people can make off-base assumptions, and that's not a new thing. People can lock onto one theory or another to explain what God is trying to reveal to us. There's many, many different opinions. We'll encounter some of them. And let's start with that first image, Les. one that we're all familiar with. I'm sure you've seen it. This is the image that represents what we read in Daniel chapter 2. And this one is fairly accurate. It shows the four successive world empires from Babylon through Rome, the last of which is still, in some manner, still in existence. But it shows a stone cut out without hands descending at a high rate of speed and smashing the toes on this image, which then begins the process of pulverizing the entire image that has been built up throughout history. Very graphic. And they've correctly identified, and we have as well in our teachings, our literature, correctly identified the four major components of that image. It's pretty well understood. It's revealing in a number of ways, and I've just described a few of them. But one of the things is there's two legs, which represents the division that came along later of the Roman Empire. And the key feature on this image is the ten toes, which we can see from Revelation 17, are also described as horns or kings. Let's go there for just a minute. Revelation 17, just to tie this together. And the ten horns which you saw are ten kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. Now, there's a component in that verse that we'll come back to. But it shows that these ten horns, or these ten toes, or these ten kings, are side by side coincident. They're not successive like the components of this image are. That's something that we need to take into account. And also notice that the ten toes come to being, into being long after the Roman Empire divides. So this brings us down to the latter days. And it also shows, and at least in the description that we read in Revelation 17, that iron and clay are going to be mixed together, commingled. And that suggests also that these are concurrent entities, not successive ones. Now, that's a little different than we might have had explained to us in the past. But these ten toes are together. They exist at the same time. They're concurrent, not sequential. And that was the fault with that person that objected to Les's message. He presented the ten as successors of one another, not the point here. And we'll see why that's important when we get to another image. But it's the stone that smashes these toes at the very bottom of the image, at the end, that destroys the whole structure of the image that has developed throughout history. Now let's go to the next image, because there's a difference in this next one. You might have seen something like this before as well. We can't quite see the bottom edge of that, but this particular image, though it's correct as far as it goes, it also, on the right, you'll see four images that they correlate to the various components of the major image, the statues. That's the problem area, because when we identify those other four images, the standing lion, the leaning bear, and the leopard, as components comparable to the images in Daniel chapter 2, it throws us a little bit of a curveball. It takes us off track of the picture a little bit. And that's the problem area. Now, I'm sure you have heard of these comparisons in the past. You can go to commentaries, and you'll find that that is the general consensus of what these images are. I want to make a point to you that they are a little bit different, and they give us a different understanding of how the world is going to develop, or how the political situation in the world is going to develop in the very near future. Because the four images that you see on the right are from Daniel chapter 7, not Daniel chapter 2. These are Daniel chapter 7. And they represent an entirely different formation of the world situation. Let's go to the next image. The idea is that Daniel chapter 7 is merely a repeat of chapter 2, which to some degree, we can perhaps understand why people would draw that conclusion. But when we understand this, we get a totally different picture. This image that you see is one that I developed 22 years ago. And it flashed into my mind how this all works out. And I rushed home and made up this diagram that shows actually how Daniel 7 fits into the picture. Now, both chapters end at the same point in time. But Daniel 2 is a succession of major world empires, where Daniel 7 is a compilation of modern empires that come together, but they both end at the same point in time. This, of course, being made a long time ago, and I understood this information long before I made up that little diagram, but this thing is not entirely, I would update some things, not entirely correct. That sweep around to the top edge where I've identified Asian powers, I would more likely today describe that as the Gog and Magog situation. And the two places in the Bible where Gog and Magog are mentioned, one is clearly post-millennial, and the other one is not distinct, but that would be more in keeping with the sweep that you see around to the top edge, which comes into the picture at the end of the millennium, where Satan is released, raises an army, and makes an attempt to conquer Jerusalem, the world capital at that time, after the millennium. So that's something we need to keep in mind. And there's copies of this on the side table over there if anyone would like to look at it. There's also images in these two booklets, The Beast and the False Prophet and Ten Kings of the books of Daniel and Revelation. These two books, unfortunately, I've only got a couple of copies. More are being printed, but a lot of the same information is in those books for anyone who wants to look at it further. But what we need to understand between the two, none of the empires that came into being in Daniel 2 were coincident. They were successive. One came after the other. Babylon did not become Persia. Persia did not become Greece. Greece did not become Rome. These were separate ethnicities, separate religions, separate governments, separate empires. They all existed with a different realm. They were one after the other. That's important to understand about Daniel 2. When we come to Daniel 7, we have a very different picture. In Daniel 7, we've got three empires that come together. They merge themselves into the fourth. They become the fourth. We can read of that in Daniel chapter 7. We should look there because this is the key to understanding the world that we're going to see developing in the next few years. Daniel 7, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of it upon his head when he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matters. Now let's understand, Daniel didn't understand what he was seeing, and he'll explain that later. Daniel spoke and said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of the heavens strove upon the great sea, and four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse from one another. The first was like a lion, and it had eagle's wings upon it. I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the earth and made stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given unto it. That's the first empire. Verse 5, and behold, another angel, another beast rather, a second like a bear. And it raised up itself on one side, and it had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth. And they said thus to it, arise, devour much flesh. And then there's a third component, verse 6. And after this I behold, and lo, another like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl. The beast had also four heads, and dominion was given to it. Verse 7, here's where this all comes together. And after this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and broke in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it. And it was diverse from the beasts that were before it. And it had 10 horns. The 10 horns, which we know from other sources, are the same as the 10 kings and the 10 crowns, which we read earlier. Those are important components. Now, when we compare that with Revelation chapter 17, we see some very similar language. Start in verse 12. And the 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. So these 10 horns, which are the 10 kings, which are the 10 toes, are all alive and functioning together. They conspire together to form another empire. Verse 13 confirms that. These have one mind. They all are thinking alike. And shall give their power, the power that they have to give. They will give their power and strength unto the beast. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful. Verse 15, and he said unto them, the waters which you saw, where the horse sits, are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. That's where these entities are going to arise from. And the 10 horns which you saw upon the beast, these shall hate the whore, and shall make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire. For God has put it in their hearts to fulfill his will, and to agree, and to give their kingdom unto the beast, until the words of God shall be fulfilled. These 10 kings exist together at the same time they think alike, and for some common purpose, they decide to merge themselves together to create a major world empire at the end time, the empire that Christ is going to destroy when he comes. And that is the stone cut out without hands that strikes the image of the beast on its 10 toes. So it's important to understand that the Daniel 2 is successive, and it covers a long span of history. But Daniel chapter 7 is specific to the final end times, and it shows the formation of the beast power, which we are going to see happen. It will happen. When it happens, we need to understand what we're seeing. So long as we think that chapter 7 is the same as chapter 2, we're going to miss the point. God has given us the ability to understand what is going to be happening. We have long taught that the beast power is going to be centered in northwestern Europe. That was our teaching, and we're not the only ones in that area. And it's correct. The beast power is going to be centered in Europe. We also taught that the 10 tribes of Israel, the so-called lost 10 tribes, are in and among those same nations. That's the curious thing. Because we want to think that the beast power is Gentile, when in reality we never put 2 and 2 together. And combined those 2 things that we understand to realize that the beast power is going to be Israelitish. That's sort of a tough thing to wrap your mind around. Who are the 10 kings? That's always the question. We've speculated over the years. We've presented many ideas. I have my own I may mention here in a few minutes, but who are they? They do exist. They are political powers. You've got 10 kings who are going to come together, and we need to identify areas of governments or nations that are sufficiently compatible where that could even happen. Are you going to mix Indians with Chinese? Is that going to work? Their cultures are so different. Their religions are so different. That wouldn't be a combine that you could think of. You're going to mix Middle Eastern nations with African nations? Again, the cultures are so different. The ethnicities are so different. The religions are so different. They can't. You couldn't expect that. Where on earth are you going to find 10 governmental entities that could even remotely do this? And that's what we can understand from what God has given us in this particular prophecy in Daniel chapter 7. For this to happen, these kings who represent their own nations, who are basically custodians of their own sovereignty, okay, that's what a king is for. He doesn't sell out his country. He's going to protect and represent his own people before other nations. But for them to be able to merge like this scripture, this prophecy describes, they have to be compatible culturally, politically, ethnically, and religiously. Where are you going to find 10 nations that could possibly fit the description? And I mention religiously because a particular religious figure is going to be the facilitator of this combination. Okay, we know who that is. It's mentioned. But who are they? Especially when we factor into the equation that all ten will collude to coalesce together to form this new empire. And what's the reason for that empire? We have in the past thought that the primary reason for that power is to punish the United States and Britain. That may be a factor, but it's not their major assignment. God has given them other assignments that we can read here. Number one is to form a military alliance that is supreme in the world. Who can make war with her? There's a boast in Revelation that talks about that. Who is able to make war with her? This is a supreme world power that is the result of this combination. The next question is, what would cause them to come together and make this alliance? This is what we need to consider. The best motivator is fear. They're afraid of something. Now, we can look at world conditions today with what's going on in the Middle East and what's going on in Ukraine, and we can understand the fear factor. Because a major world power is getting shellacked in the invasion of a small neighbor. How is that happening? We wouldn't expect that. If we looked at this a year or two ago, we would have said Russia's going to sweep across Ukraine. It's not happening. I mean, they have the losses, military hardware and personnel, the losses are horrendous. We wouldn't expect that. But no doubt other nations are looking at that and realizing that their military security is nowhere near what it needs to be. So it could very well be some kind of military threat that would cause them to come together. That's their boast. Who is able to make war with us? We're so powerful now that we're together. Could that be the factor? That's something that we can easily draw from what we read here in this particular prophecy. When we read God's prophecies, especially those as intricate as Daniel chapter 7 and Revelation 13 and 17 and so on, when we read those, we need to take particular note of the details, because God gives us a lot of details. Just as an interesting fact, let's look at some of the details. In chapter 7 of Daniel, it talks about an empire represented by a standing lion, followed by an empire represented by a leaning bear. Is there any nation on earth that's ever been referred to as the bear? Can you think of one? And then a third empire that's represented by a leopard. An empire that likes to represent its military prowess with cat-like figures. Panthers, so on. That's what a leopard is, another form of a panther. Now, he gives them in that order because Daniel is speaking prophetically. But when we go to Revelation 13, we find something interesting, because the same three are represented again, but in reverse order. Daniel is referring to three empires that are to come. But John, at the point in time that he's writing about, is looking backward in time, and he lists the characteristics in reverse order. I think it's about verse 12. Let's start in verse 11. And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth. And he had two horns and a lamb, and he spoke as a dragon. This is the spiritual entity that is going to be behind all of this. And that's another component that we need to take into account. There is going to be a representative of the great red dragon who is going to be the motivator here. Verse 12, and he exercises all the power of the first beast before him. There's two beasts. One is under supporting the other, and causes the earth and them that was dwell therein to worship the first beast. It's the first beast that we've been talking about to this point, whose deadly wound was healed. 13:2. And the beast which I saw was like, there it is, was like unto a leopard. Same leopard. And his feet were as the feet of a bear. Same bear. And his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon, the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great, great authority. Okay? John is looking backward in time, and he lists these same three in reverse order. Daniel is looking forward in time, and he lists them in the other order, the order of their origination. The British Empire formed first. The Russian Empire came along later. And the German Empire was last of the three. Is that who these people are? To me, it makes a lot of sense. Now, back to the question, who are the ten kings? Well, it just so happens that within these three empires, which existed, you know, from the middle 1800s to the early 1900s, these three major empires were all comprised of governments that had kings. They do to this day. There are seven active monarchies in Europe still in existence. And it's only two or three more that would fill out the ten. And those two or three more that don't have kings at the present time did have them prior to World War I. So is this talking about the end time? Is this describing the formation of the beast? That's the question I want to put out there. You can think differently if you want. You've heard other things in the past. That's fine. If you're satisfied with that, fine. I just want to encourage people to study into this because, in my opinion, Christ is very revealing in what he has given us. We're going to see it happen, however it happens. Whatever the outcome is, we're going to see it happen. How we respond to it and how we understand what's going on and how we have the strength and fortitude to endure through these developments and how we help others understand who don't understand. It says in Daniel chapter, 12? Let's go there. I meant to mention this earlier, Daniel chapter 12. And understand, Daniel didn't get it. He was describing things that, to a large degree, he did not understand. They weren't applicable in his time frame. In verse 10, Daniel 12:10. And he's talking about the time when the saints are going to be tried in very particular ways. He says, many shall be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked will do wickedly, and none of the wicked will understand. But the wise shall understand. Now, throughout history, the Church of God has not understood prophecies very specifically, in many cases just superficially. As we get to the time of the end, that's different. But he says that they're sealed until the time of the end. That's the plan. God wasn't intending, nor could they fully comprehend, as we can today, the fulfillment of these particular prophecies. As we get closer and closer to the time of the end, it's going to be increasingly obvious what the fulfillment of these are. And that's where we come in. Because we are going to need to understand what we're seeing. We're going to need to be able to explain to people what's going on, to give them hope, because we know what's beyond it. What's beyond it is the millennial kingdom. Now, those people in ancient times or throughout the Middle Ages and so on, they haven't understood this. And it wasn't meant for them. Does that mean they were wicked? No. It just wasn't the time. This reference to the wicked in verse 10 is at the point in time when certain things could be understood. But they're not going to be understood by the general population. And they're not going to be understood all that much by religious people. That's where we come in, to be able to explain to people what's going on, why it's going on, and what the ultimate outcome is going to be: the millennial kingdom, Christ returning to the earth, destroying this beast system. It goes clear back to Babylon, frankly. There's many references to Babylon, and we find it's talking about the political and religious situation in the world throughout history. But particularly now, as we face the last times. So how do they come together? Well, there's going to be some kind of threat. And that threat is going to be largely military, because that is their boast. Who was able to make war with us? But there's another thing that we need to consider, and that's forming, in my opinion, even now. The beast power is going to have unprecedented economic control over the world, to the point where it's not going to be possible even to buy and sell unless you are approved by the system. Now, something like that's already going on in China, but this is a different entity entirely, but it shows that it can happen. In China, if you're not approved by the government, if you've been caught doing something that they regard as subversive, you can't buy a bus ticket. You can't travel. You can't go anywhere. You may or may not be able to find employment, certainly not government employment. They're doing that to their own people already. The world could do that. Okay? Have you ever heard of the World Economic Forum? Do you know what that is? It's formed already. It's working already. It has an agenda already. We may not see it just yet. But it certainly is the intent of the political elite in the world. Not the elected officials. These are other people. The financial powers that rule the world, over and above government officials that we might be able to name. These are people we don't know their names necessarily. A few of them are household words. I could name a couple, but the point is, there is the agenda to control the world, number one, through fear, and we've seen examples of that recently, but through economic means as well. Our government almost, I don't know if they did it, but they almost voted to turn over the health situation in this country. And other nations in the world have already done this, but turn it over to the World Health Organization, who can declare a pandemic or a pending pandemic at any time and shut down the world economy and sequester all people to their own cities. In Britain, and I don't know where else, they're talking about 15-minute cities. You ever heard of those? can't get more than 15 minutes away from your house, and that's mostly on foot. That's your circle of operation. They think that's going to save the world. The ideas are there. They just need the power to implement them. And what's the power that is going to do it? There's only one possible candidate, as far as we're concerned, and that is this fourth beast that we're talking about, the modern day world empire. Now, we think of them as being assigned the primary function of conquering or punishing the U.S. and British people, the English-speaking peoples. And as I said before, that's a possible function, and I can show you a place where that could be very reasonably possible. But their major assignment is to conquer the Middle East. And there's an important reason why they need to do that. And that is the prophecy that we read of in Daniel chapter 13, I think it is. Or is it 11? I'm sorry, Daniel 11, the king of the north versus the king of the south. This power, with the 10 kings, with the religious backing in its formation and in its sustainability and its worship, is going to rise up and conquer the Middle East and control the world economy. Revelation 13:17. Doesn't take a lot, or there isn't a lot said about it, at least not in this, but Revelation 13:17. Verse 16, and he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bonds, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads. A lot has been speculated about how that's going to come about. That no man might buy or sell if you don't have that mark. Have you thought about how you're going to survive in that situation? It will come. It's prophesied. God's prophecies are true. They are revealing. It's a message to us to understand what's going to be coming upon us at the end times. I asked about the World Economic Forum and their agenda. We should be watching. We're told to watch. Now, in this chart, you'll notice I put the EEC, which back 20 to 30 years ago was our big bugaboo, the European Economic Community. We figured that was going to be the precursor leading into the beast power. To some degree, it was logical at the time, but I think there's a greater entity that has moved into place behind them. And you also notice I got the UN there. At the time, I thought the United Nations might be influential in the formation of these 10 kings. I don't know if you're paying attention to the United Nations, but they are heavily involved in this global warming business. I don't think there's many of us that haven't heard about that. But the UN is deeply involved in that. Why? How did that get to be their job? Newspaper article a few days ago. The UN plan to control speech online. Control speech online. Why is the United Nations involved in controlling the media? Was that part of their original charter? Is that what they do? Who elected them to do that? How did they get that agenda in mind? Do you see what's happening? It turns out that was more insightful than I realized at the time. But all of this is forming on the periphery, and it just takes the right trigger to scare the pants off of the nations of Europe to realize that they had better come together because there are major military threats against them. There's a piece on YouTube a few days ago, and I believe it was first published by the one of the major news bureaus. There is a desire in Siberia to secede from Russia. You've heard of that? Think about the implications of that. China is signing off on the invasion of Taiwan because of the obstacles that they see. It's 100 miles of water. You got to get troops over there. You can't just lob rockets. You got to do something to conquer a nation. China is looking elsewhere because that's not necessarily a viable, especially watching how Russia is getting set back severely in Ukraine. Don't think that they're not paying attention to that. But at the same time, our military ammunition stocks are severely depleted, not just us, but Europe as well. So they've increased their own vulnerability by supporting Ukraine militarily. It's understandable why we would want to do that, but the point is, we're depleting our military hardware faster than it can be replaced. So you can see why, in time, the world can become very concerned about their vulnerability, and that would drive these nations to coalesce into a superpower that they feel could not be conquered. I'm just saying, that's a possibility. Who are the 10 nations? I asked that question a couple of times. Let me give you my personal list of possibilities. Sweden, Norway, Denmark, England, Scotland, Ireland, Netherlands, Russia, Austria, and Germany. There's 10 right there. And if any of them are not, you've still got Switzerland, Finland, and France to fill out the list. But all of those countries are in Central Europe. All of them we have identified, and we could go to the next chart, all of them we have identified as having been the nations where the 10 tribes of Israel ended up. We taught that for years. But did we ever put it together? Now, coincidentally, all of those nations had kings. But not just that. All of those nations had kings and queens that were related to one another. They're all cousins over there. Okay? King Christian IX of Denmark, Queen Victoria of Britain, all of these kings and queens of the early 20th century were direct descendants of these two. It's all family. They don't get along. Of course, what families ever squabbled, you know what I'm saying? Even the tribes of Israel, when they were in the land, didn't get along at all that well. But here's the thing. Not only are they compatible culturally, ethnically, and religiously, but they're all related to one another. They were. There's 7 royal families still in so-called power to some degree. And you could add back a couple more And there would easily be 10. In my opinion, these are the 10 kings that are going to come together. And you can't say, you know, we used to change it to 10 nations because we didn't think there were that many kings. Well, there were. There are. But nations don't do that. When you have the independent governments of all of these nations, they're not going to come together in a single mind. You need a major political figure to head up those nations who can steer the nations in a way that their parliaments could not. Okay? There are three nations that it talks about that are going to be, it says, uprooted. And I wonder if those three might be England, Scotland, and Ireland. Just personal speculation again. But that would put them in the negative situation that we've described about the beast power punishing U.S. and Britain. Again, just a possibility. Let me conclude with a couple of passages from Revelation 12. Because this gives us more of the background. To this point, we've been considering more or less the political manifestation. But there is a motivator in all of this. Revelation 12, starting in verse 3. And there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns. The 7 heads are the 7 restorations of that particular entity. The 10 horns are the governmental figures on the last of the horns, the heads rather. And 7 crowns upon its heads. And his tail drew in a third part of the stars of heaven and did cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman which was ready to be delivered for to devour her child as soon as it was born. And that's another one of the assignments of the beast power, is to make war against the saints. That's a reality. The saints need to take that seriously. Down to verse 7. And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought against his angels. This is a spiritual warfare that's beyond our scope of awareness, but it's real. Verse 9, and the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan. No question now who that's talking about. Which deceives the whole world. He was cast out unto the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. Verse 13, and when the dragon saw that he was cast unto the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child. Verse 16, and the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. Verse 17, and the dragon was wroth with the woman and went to make war with the end-time remnants of her seed, which, of all things, keep the commandments and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. Let me finish with something from the red letter section of your Bibles. And that tells us that this was Jesus Christ's own personal words. It's in Luke 21, verses 34 to 36. He says, but give attention to yourselves, for fear that your hearts become over full of the pleasures of food and wine and the cares of this life, and that day may come on you suddenly and take you as in a net. For so it will come on all those who are living on the face of the earth. And I'm reading from the Bible in Basic English translation. I want to rephrase verse 35 to explain a little more of what it's trying to say. For so it will come on all those who are living superficially on all the earth. Verse 36, but keep watch at all times with prayer, that you may be strong enough to come through all these things and to take your place before the Son of Man.